Welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us anytime during the program, the phone lines are open. 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use. And if you're on the neighbor islands or listening to the live stream, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Should the University of Hawaii endowment sell off its investments in fossil fuel companies? A group formed by faculty, students, and other people hope so. They're concerned that the university's investment policy is inconsistent with the school's drive towards sustainable energy. The task group appointed by the UH Regents last week will now consider the idea for the next few months and make recommendations that they'll be delivering by the end of April. Tonight on Town Square, our panel will take up the issue, and we hope you will too. Joining me this evening, Joe Mobley, who's a professor in the School of Nursing at UH Manoa. That said, his primary research interest is marine mammals. He's the co-leader of the Divest UH group, looking to convince the UH Board of Regents to divest all fossil fuel-related stocks and funds from the UH endowment. Also here with us is Doree Shin. She's the first student sustainability coordinator at University of Hawaii, and she helped lead the campaign to ban styrofoam from the campus and the schools, and also to create the school sustainability policy. Let's try that again. And to create the school sustainability policy. Now she's involved with Divest UH. And rounding out our panel tonight, we've got Representative Chris Lee. He represents the district into which he was born, House District 51, Kailua and Waimanalo. He is the Assistant Majority Leader in the State House and chairs the Energy and Environmental Protection Committee. He authored Hawaii's Climate Adaptation Initiative that was passed last year and has been pushing to move Hawaii off fossil fuels. That's our panel. And, of course, you're here, too. Again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Thank you to all of you for being here tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Joe, I'd like to start with you because you're obviously one of the driving forces behind all of this, and now you're co-leader of Divest UH. How many of you have been pushing this on the campus?
There's a core group of about 10 of us, and it includes not just faculty and students, but community people as well. My partner, the other co-leader behind this is Brody Lockhart, for example, who's been very active in community issues related to sustainability and environmental protection. So it's a nice mix of folks. It's worked very well.
So this core group is faculty, students,
graduate students, undergrad students, and then community members as well.
10 people sounds a little tiny.
Well,
but
is.
If you have a small but mighty group, which is what you've been saying that you think you've gotten, that the movement is growing, how did you take this idea of creating sustainability on the campus and leverage that into the idea that it should be consistent with how the UH invests?
Well, it's we can't pretend that it was our idea. This has been the main mechanism that 350.org has been using, not only in the U.S. but all over the world. And the divestment campaign has really been promulgated and put out there as being the main way that we can affect change in the most rapid possible way. It worked very well back in the 80s with the South African apartheid campaign. It's worked with the tobacco industry. And I think it's important to let the listeners know that we don't delude ourselves into thinking that we're going to cripple Exxon and Chevron and BP and companies like that. We don't expect to have any financial impact at all. It's all about the message that divestment sends. And the UH is just the first step in a series of messages that we want to send, with larger and larger funds in the state of Hawaii.
This is not something that is in and of Hawaii, as you've mentioned, at UH. Other schools have done it. Some have done it with success. Some have met a great deal of resistance. What does that balance look like for schools who have done well with this divestment policy and others that have just thrown up their hands and said, not now?
Well, the smaller schools, there's 16 schools in the U.S. altogether who have divested. And by and large, they tend to be the smaller private kind of liberal arts colleges and so on that are a little bit more nimble and have smaller size endowments. But, the endowments, in fact, that we're looking at UH are comparable to some of their endowments because ours is not large. And the only large, quote-unquote, research-intensive university, similar to UH Manoa, that has divested is Stanford, and they did coal only. Other schools like Columbia and New York, got as far as, bringing divestment to their board of trustees, where you're talking, over $1 billion in divestment. And they have, backed down. So some have stepped up, some have not. But we feel we have counter arguments, to all the reasons why Columbia and even Harvard, for example, have backed off from it. It's a wave that's picking up, and it's gathering force. And there's no question that it's going to continue. There'll be more and more, not only universities, but whole municipalities, whole cities have divested, for example. So it's not something that's going to go away.
Well, certainly not going away with what you've set out for yourselves to push this agenda. Representative Chris Lee, I want to talk to you a little bit because this has been very much concentrated on the UH campus, but you'd like to see this go system-wide.
That's right. Well, actually, even beyond that, and I think with what Joe's talking about, not being able to actually make a financial impact in the bottom line of some of these companies, I think that's the case right now. But if this were to be something bigger and we took the next step and had not just municipalities like Seattle, Portland, Boulder, and many other big cities start to divest their holdings, but entire states, that really starts to snowball things. And that can actually, I hope, in the long term, change the direction that these companies are going and the impact they're having on us. And so one of the things we're looking at right now is starting the conversation at the state level. And that means introducing a bill this year at the legislature, which we're doing actually today. Within minutes, this bill will be filed, which starts the conversation about what we're going to do with our $40 billion state employees retirement system fund. And should we start divesting from fossil fuels there? And this is something that I think is going to take some time. There's no question about that. Other places, Massachusetts is another state that started this conversation, and they set out about a 6-8 year timeline with which to act. And that's in their legislation, which they're working on passing even as we speak. This would do something similar. And they're really at the core of it, the reason we want to do this beyond just sending a message is because we're using public taxpayer dollars to fund and invest in institutions like this whose activities are raising the cost for the public. We are spending millions of dollars right now preparing to adapt to climate change and the impacts it's going to have on us, which everyone knows is a result of carbon and some of the things that these companies are doing. So the question is, how can we invest those public funds in a better way that's going to support the beneficiaries and the retiring the retirements of all the folks that this fund supports, but also not do harm to the taxpayer.
You're really looking at how do you do this responsibly, because the money still has to be invested somewhere, but you're looking to do it in more of an ethical perspective, or from a perspective that says we're not going to do any harm with this. But then again, a lot of the people who may be talking about this are going to go home in their automobiles. How do you make some argument that says this is where we are now and this is what we're going to do, and let's just start the conversation? Because it seems from what you said, that's really the purpose of your bill.
That's right. I mean, it'd be great if it would pass this year. I don't know what the support's going to be. I know there are other folks who believe strongly that this is the way to go. But like any piece of legislation, like any public policy, it takes a conversation, it takes collaboration, and ultimately compromise. So this may be a process that takes us a couple of years, and we're ready for that because it needs to start today, and that's the important thing. So I look forward to a spirited debate about where this is going to go.
All right. Well, let's see if we have some of that spirited debate tonight. We want to hear from you. What do you think about the UH divesting its funds from fossil fuel companies, and what would you think if that concept were to go bigger and wider than just the UH, but to go into a statewide or other municipalities around our state? What would you do about that? Would you think that would be a good thing to support? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Doration, I want to bring you into the conversation because you are very much the student part of all of this. And as we've seen with other activities on campus, whether it was for the styrofoam or just general sustainability policies, or way back when with Sustainable Saunders and all that, it was so driven by students. How much leverage do you think you have in this fight?
I see that students in every fight that I've fought, if you want to call them fights, have been extremely influential. And it actually surprises me almost every campaign I've been a part of to see how much the administration and how much the decision makers that affect our lives and our education really do care about how we feel and how we think. And I think that, you know, there's kind of a perception that students in Hawaii have some sense of apathy. And so with that assumption in mind, I think when decision makers do see students taking a stand and being passionate about something that's happening on the campus that these decision makers have control over, they are very inspired and they start to pay attention and they start to bring values back into their actions.
And you don't feel in this situation that you're sort of getting any sort of gesture that says, oh, well, you're just students and we're going to listen to the big people?
Because we work in environmental issues specifically, I think that because we're young people and this is an issue that affects us most, and it affects us because the climate crisis is something that we've unwillingly inherited from the generations that came before us, I think that there is a sense of kuleana that decision makers feel for taking care of us, because we are the ones facing the climate crisis in this generation today. It's no longer in the future anymore. And so I do think that there is a lot of power.
They're taking you seriously.
Absolutely.
All right. We've got some callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, we do want to hear from you. What do you make of the argument that UH should divest its funds that are placed in investments held for companies that are involved with fossil fuel? Would you like to see those go away and be replaced by something else? What else might there be? That's part of the conversation that the group that's been recently formed by the UH Regents will be looking at. What funds are there? Are they big enough funds to be able to supplant the ones that are going to, hopefully, according to this group, if you listen to them, be divested? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Peter calling us from Hawaii Island. Aloha, Peter. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Quick question. I'm aware that Shell Oil for one and Exxon for another does invest in alternative energy research. I think we want to support that. So how are we going to do that? That's my question.
All right. Good.
Good
question. Along with the argument that we all have cars that we're going to get in, is the idea that we have to have a bridge between where we are now to where we are in the future. And certainly some of the companies that are involved with, you know, fossil fuels now would like to see their business have longevity. And so they, too, as Peter said, are involved with trying to find out how they do that. How do they get involved with alternative energy? Do you want to turn them away from the table and from investing in that right now?
Well, I think the answer to the question, and it's a point well taken, is divestment. I think if there is an impact in the long term that could potentially begin to affect these companies' bottom lines, it will propel them to actually put more of their emphasis, more of their own investments into renewable fuels, because that would hopefully then deal with that public pressure. I think it's especially important to us here in Hawaii, where we are a drop in the bucket compared to the rest of the world in terms of the impact we're having on carbon emissions and everything else with climate change. And one of the only ways that we can have an impact outside Hawaii, because we can change our laws here and we can do what we're going to do here, but we have no authority anywhere else, is through a market-based campaign like this, where we can control where we put our money. And that's something that I'm hoping helps compel these companies and actually helps start new companies, so we have more competition on the green energy side to start going.
You're really talking about, in essence, voting with your wallet.
Absolutely.
All right. We're going now back to the Big Island. We've got Sachi calling us. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi there. Well, it was a great conversation you're having. I was just thinking about what's going on at Hickam Air Force Base right now, and if the university would check in with the guys at Hickam, because what they're doing is they're making solarized hydrogen, and all the cars are running on it, and the buses are leasing from the military. Find out what they're doing with their money and how they're using this hydrogen, and find out if they can get involved in it.
All right, Sachi, thanks very much for the call. Well, you know, some of the companies even that you're talking about divesting are also and have been also looking at some of those issues. But she's saying specifically find out where that technology is coming from, and would you be willing to look at that? Part of the question to you, Joe, would be that right now you are getting involved with this process. Do you really know all of the funds held by the regents? Because we've talked about different pools of money, and you're talking about now the smallest pool that the regents administrates.
Yeah, that's a good point. The fund that we're looking at now is the one that the Board of Regents have direct control over, and it's a scholarship fund, and it's relatively small. It's about $66 million total. And the scholarships come from the earnings off that fund, and it's about a little over $1 million in earnings a year. And so we have to find a way, if we're going to divest, we have to make sure that we don't nip into those earnings, because we absolutely want to sustain those scholarships. But then once, if we divest successfully and performance of that portfolio is consistent and stable, then the next step would be to go to the big endowment of the university, which is held by the University of Hawaii Foundation. And they're a separate entity. The Board of Regents can't tell them what to do. So we'd have to pitch it to their trustees, and then it's a pot of money of about $260 million altogether, so a little bit larger. So we're going one step at a time, but because we're dealing with the smaller fund, we feel it's kind of a good test case. You know, it's smaller, a little less risk involved. So if we can do this and do it effectively, it'll be a good test example for going larger and larger, and ultimately, you know, with Chris's bill, maybe even to the employee retirement system.
If it gets all the way to that point, there are going to be a lot of people very concerned that they're going to be able to get their retirement, that this fund is going to be able to produce. Some of the smaller entities that you're looking at that perhaps might be part of a $66 million fund and do very well might not be able to make enough to generate in the larger sense. How then are you going to be able to leverage this small test case with funds that may only be existing now into the larger case scenario? Do you have enough data that shows what those funds are? Are there enough green funds to go around?
That's a great question. That's something I think that time is really growing. There's a limited number of funds on a broad scale right now, but each passing year, you get more and more as technology advances and you get more companies coming online to invest in. But I want to point out something important, and that's what you brought up, is what is the risk involved? If you're a state employee right now and you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, perhaps what if this doesn't go well? Does that mean that my retirement's compromised? And one of the things that a lot of places are building into these policies, and we're building in here, is a backstop so that if there is any losses, if, for example, you lose a fraction of a percent of the value of the retirement system or the fund at hand, then there's an out, and you can go and invest in other things or limit your divestment at that point.
This would be each individual person would have control over his or her account to say, no, I don't want to be part of that, or that's the whole thing entirely.
Right, the whole thing entirely. So if you start to lose value, basically, then it stops. And so you're looking for...
If the fund starts to lose value, then the group administrating the fund would have to choose to do something else.
Right.
And they would have that ability to do it. As opposed to when you say you, I don't want people to think that they have the ability to make...
Oh, no, that's right. So as the fund itself makes this determination. And so if there's any value lost there, then there's an out and they can go do something else.
All right, guys. A lot of you always talk about sustainability. How far are you willing to take it? Starting with this step, which some around this table regard as being just a first stab at the idea that the UH and the state, and in between that, some of the municipalities should be divesting from investments that are involved with fossil fuel companies. How do you feel about that? And do you feel that there's any risk to doing it? We want to hear from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. As you know, there is a task group that's now looking at how the UH Regents would potentially divest their fossil fuel investments and what might supplant those in the endowment. They don't have all the information yet. They're just beginning to get involved with it. They've got a couple of months to be able to do that. But tonight we're looking at just the idea of it. How do you feel about it? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Joining me tonight is Professor Joe Mobley from the School of Nursing at UH Manoa Do-Re-Shin, who is the first student sustainability coordinator, among other things, and she's led campaigns there for the styrofoam and also general sustainability policies, and now involved with Divest UH, and Representative Chris Lee. And, you know, of course, he's the Assistant Majority Leader in the State House and chairs the Energy and Environmental Protection Committee. And you're here, too, and we do want to hear what you have to say about it. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. All right, so looking at the sort of, you know, the situation that you've laid out now, you've got the next couple of months that you're going to be able to kind of figure out what can you do with this. Has it ever been a thought in your mind that maybe there wouldn't be appropriate funds for you to swap out with this? I know you've got other schools that you've seen do it. Is there some sort of roadmap that other schools have given you, say, here, this is what you do?
Well, we know they exist, and I won't pretend to be an expert in finance. I'm a whale researcher, but we have the Operio Group, who has joined us in testimony. They're, you know, headquartered in the Bay Area, and they have put up some examples of funds and their performance versus the non-green side, you know, that contain fossil fuels. And we've seen, you know, no evidence of, you know, major loss in performance. So,
do you have any idea about how big those funds are?
Well, no. But, you know, I don't have the data does exist. I mean, Aperio Group did an analysis for us. We had Donald Gould, who was one of the trustees from Pitzer College, one of the Claremont Group colleges in Claremont, California. He's also a financial analyst as well as being a trustee of that college. And he did a separate performance analysis for us. So we know they exist. It's kind of a boutique industry right now. There's not, you know, that many, certainly not as large as UBS and groups like that, but they do exist, and enough to absorb the endowments that, you know, in the hundreds of millions of some of these smaller colleges. But that's what we're, you know, basically the size that we're looking at for UH right now. So it's similar.
So that might be something that you could be able to manage with a $66 million fund.
Yeah, it'd be relatively easy to do with them
It
is such a smaller, right?
But because you mentioned if this is really a boutique industry, that sort of brings up the point, well, is timing going to be a factor in this? I mean, would things look different if you waited 2 years?
Well, I don't think, I mean, frankly, being a researcher involved in the indicators of climate change, I don't think we have that kind of time. Mm-hmm. I think we have to move very quickly because it's already happening. I mean, I see the evidence in my own work of, you know, coastlines eroding and, you know, coral reefs bleaching from the effects of global warming. I think we just have to move fast.
But making that move from, okay, we're going to divest these funds and use others instead, which are green funds, and then saying because of global warming, that's a pretty big leap. So, Chris Lee, how do you begin to put that into the context of, okay, here's really the way that you might ask people to manage some of their expectations or mitigate them in some ways, because certainly just swapping out the funds that Joe's talking about won't necessarily mean that we're going to see great mitigation of climate change, but maybe that's not something that we can see until it gets to a much larger point.
That's right. You know, we don't know what the impact is going to be. And from the state side, we're looking at rising seas, loss of fresh water supply, any number of indicators that's going to require massive public investment, billions of dollars in the coming decades. And that's money that taxpayers are going to have to pay one way or another. It's also going to be money that business is going to have to end up paying, because there's going to be a lot of impacts. If you lose tourism because of the Waikiki Beach and others like it, washes away. There's a lot of factors here. The risk is tremendous. So the question is, with that broad risk at hand, what can we do today to make even a small dent in the amount of impact that that's going to have on us? And that's what this is about. It's taking the steps we can take with almost no risk to us here or to these funds to be able to start that, make a dent, and save money, hopefully, a generation two from now.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the issue of taking funds that are invested in fossil fuel companies and swapping them out, those funds part of the investment and endowment of the UH Regents, looking at that first small pot of money, that $66 million is being a test case. And then if those around my table tonight have their way, growing that into a movement that might go even statewide. But we want to hear what you have to say. Usually you guys are all over it when all you have to do is say the word sustainability and the phones light up. But now, does this change the equation? Because we're talking about perhaps your money. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Rowan, calling us from IAEA. Aloha, welcome to Town Square.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I had a question on the, you mentioned that there was funds available for divesting in fossil fuels. Is that money could be used for research or?
Rowan, I don't think I understand your question. We're talking about an investment fund that's administrated by the UH Regents and what some at the school would like to see happen, at least at Manoa would like to happen, is that those funds are divested and other green funds are purchased and those are used for the purpose of creating investment.
Oh, I don't know if I really understand everything, but if, you know, there was funds available, then if, you know, UH College of Engineering could possibly develop a diesel engine based upon Stanley Meyer's research and he had passed away now, but his technology is also found in the H2000 welder. But it's basically a hydrogen on demand that runs the engine. And so if you could run a generator at HECO on hydrogen, then maybe they could give like some funding back, and then wouldn't have any energy bill.
Ron, what I hear you saying is you're looking for some way of creating another funding stream.
No, I was just using that funding to come up with like a generator to run HECO generators off of on-demand hydrogen, which the technology is available. But and the cut that UH would get would help.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. The cut that UH would get would be creating a funding stream for UH. You're saying that if you're going to take the technology and perhaps take some of the investment that they may be getting, although right now it's earmarked for scholarships, that you'd like to see that sort of become almost a closed circle where, you know, sort of research and development is done, and then it creates some sort of funding stream for the university, and that in turn brings more dollars in, but done
in
a green
actually,
way by itself.
It would actually turn the energy bill of UH to zero.
All right. Well, I'm glad you called. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Going now to Brody calling us. You all know Brody. He's part of Divest UH. Aloha, Brody. Thanks for your call.
Aloha. I'm calling to correct something that the first caller mentioned, that oil companies are interested in a clean energy future and are researching alternatives. That's not really true. British Petroleum tried to rebrand themselves years ago as Beyond Petroleum, and they dropped that after just a couple of years. No major oil company has ever spent enough on alternatives for it to amount to even 10% of its revenues or its assets. And if you look at the list of the 200 companies with the most carbon reserves, as kept track of by Carbon Tracker, 75% of those companies have no evidence of clean tech revenues.
So how do you make sense of a company wanting to ensure its longevity? Because I think that's where he was going with it, that if they don't want to see themselves simply go away, that they have to do something to, you know, translate into a modern world's needs.
We wish that they would, but we don't see any evidence that they are. Exxon and Shell and the other big oil companies are denying that climate change is even caused by human activity. They are denying that they have any assets that are at any risk, even though a number of scientists groups have said that anywhere from 20% to 80% of known carbon reserves need to stay in the ground to avoid catastrophic climate change.
All right, Brody, thanks very much for calling with the correction.
And if I could step in just for a second, I think it brings up a really good point, and that's that there are a lot of people in a lot of other places that really don't see this issue as a priority, climate change. But here in Hawaii, one of the reasons that this debate is so important right now is because we are one of those places where I think the average person on the street understands the issue. And they understand what impact it's having on our communities, on our economy. And so it's up to us. I think we have an obligation here in our state as a member of the larger country to be able to spread this message and say, look, we've got a problem. It's affecting us already. And if we do something about it today, everybody's going to benefit. And that's what divestment really is about.
All right. If you're just joining us tonight on Town Square, we're talking about divestment, specifically divesting funds that are wrapped up in fossil fuel companies. And that would be the first pot of money that the UH Regents administrates. And what would happen if that fund were supplanted with others that are green-based? And you can take green-based to mean funds that might be ethically and in many ways perhaps more of what you talk about a lot of the time when you call this show and say, well, it's our ethical obligation. So if that's so, how would you feel about the swap out of that, if it could be swapped out? And how long would you be willing to give it a shot to see if it works? And then perhaps look at growing that movement. Other municipalities have done it. Other schools have done it. The question is, would you be willing to have it happen here, especially if it might mean that your retirement funds, if you are wrapped up in the state's retirement program, if it ever got up to that point, how far are you willing to go is the big question. How far are you really willing to go with this? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Or if you want to tweet me, I'm at BKOZHPR. Sorry for not telling you that a little earlier. Doration, you've been kind of quiet in all this too, but as you hear people come up with these ideas of, well, you know, we're all involved with some form of pollution. You can't help yourself. I mean, you're going to get on a bus and maybe it'll be clean energy and maybe it won't be if you're in different places around the country. Most people get into their cars and are pretty wedded to having that. And people sometimes will talk a very good game until it begins to really affect them at a level where they're not pleased to be involved with it anymore. Do you think that generationally that there's a divide in that, that your generation is better about being involved with sharing economy and generally having a different way of measuring your own, you know, sense of, well, things?
Yeah, absolutely. My generation, you know, my peers, when I have conversations with them, we're so inspired by all of these radical movements that are happening around the world that are demanding action on these crises that we know are to be true. And yeah, so the sharing economy is really, really big. There's more and more people all over the world that are, you know, realizing that financial capital is not our only option, that we have social capital, biological capital, cultural capital, all of these different forms of valuable resources that we can tap into that are not part of the status quo and that don't cause as much suffering as financial capital does, which has caused these fossil fuel industries to thrive and to extract resources from Mother Earth and has caused suffering all over the world. And so I think that our generation and probably the generation after mine is starting to realize that we all together need to transcend the system that has been causing these crises. They're at the root of all of these crises that we face today.
All right, let's see what Sarah from Pearl City has to say. Aloha, Sarah. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I just wanted to comment on what I have done personally. I've inherited some funds through an Edward Jones sort of fund. Anyway, and I took all of those things that were harming animals and the environment, and I changed them to some funds that did not do that. And so I think if we're saying we're going to do this, then we have to put our funds where we're talking about.
Which is kind of my question to everybody listening, because normally when we talk about that, there are great sweeping generalities that people make. But really, when it comes down to it, are you willing to make those switches in your own life? And then by extension, to be involved with other switches. In this case, we're talking about the UH Regents potentially switching out some of their funds that would be less harmful, not involved with fossil fuels. And then what happens as that begins to move outward? How far are you willing to go with it? The whole idea of ethical investing, does that really have a place in your life?
I certainly hope it has a place for a lot of people.
All right, Sarah.
If one person does it, maybe one more friend will do it. And you just have to,
you know, put your butt where your mouth is.
Well, do you talk to your friends about this? Obviously, you've told all of us about it, but what about your intimate circle?
Oh, yes. It's something I stand on the soapbox about.
And who listens? Has anybody else made any changes that you know
yes,
of?
Yes. In fact, some of the ladies I teach with have done just that, and it's a lovely thing.
All right, Sarah. Well, thank you for calling up and letting us know, too.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. 941-3689 is the number to call if you're on Oahu, or 877-941-3689. You know, and I don't mean to beat this over the head, but so very often we get calls and people are all over it when it comes to we've got to have a sustainable society. We have to have sustainable energy policies. I mean, many of these things, Chris, you know, we've been talking about since, you know, kid days, and many of the things that we're still talking about now in not so kid days, and that our kids and your kids and everybody else's kids are going to be dealing with too. At what point do you look at it and you say, Dore, that you know your generation gets it, and the one behind you is getting it because you feel you're inheriting a big fat problem that everybody else older than you has left for you.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that the culture has bled into our generation as well. I do see that. I mean, the majority of people, even in my generation, are still stuck in this paradigm that is so focused on this unsustainable economic system. And I think that's why the divestment movement is so important, because it shows that the institution is living up to its commitments on sustainability. And we see this all over the world, that institutional change is a catalyst for social change. And so the institution showing that they are willing to take the lead on this is really going to inspire our generation and the students who are part of this university and the people who are part of this community, that this is something that we're all working towards together. And it's not just something that the people need to keep fighting and resisting for, but that this is a movement that we're all in.
All in, except perhaps the companies that will be divested.
Right, but companies are not people, as we know.
That's a whole other conversation on other days.
Next time.
941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you'd like to join us for this conversation about whether or not UH should divest from its endowment some of the fossil fuel funds that the UH regents are responsible for. Did you want to jump in here with something?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, I think as much as we talk about this being a generational thing, and full disclosure, I only turned 34 yesterday, so I like to think I'm still of the younger generation, but the gray is starting to come in. So that being said, I mean, I do hear a lot, especially from other elected officials, other colleagues here in Hawaii and in other states, that we are starting to quantify some of the impacts that climate change is having. We're starting to feel it in our pocketbooks, and we have numbers. And that's what's starting to change the conversation from the touchy-feely, we want to do something about climate change, you know, we want to protect the environment, to we need to do something because it's having an impact on our bottom lines. And we can look at any number of examples. Most recently, the money that we're having to set aside because our fresh water supply, for example, is going to be decreasing, and it's expected we're going to be short 130 million gallons per day. A couple decades from now, and we're going to have to do something about that here in Oahu, and we're going to have to pay for that. So the question is, what is the value of that versus what is the value of spending dollars today to try and mitigate some of that? And in divestment, unlike virtually any other infrastructure investment, we have a virtually risk-free way of making an impact down the road. I think that's something that's more valuable than anything else we could do.
All right, we're going to go to some of our callers. Going now to Dawn calling us from Hawaii Kai. Aloha, welcome to Town Square.
Hi, Beth Ann. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I admire the caller who called a few minutes ago, Sarah from IAEA, I think, who talked about realigning her portfolio to reflect her values.
From Pearl City, yes.
You know, there is a larger case to be made for divestment that goes to people of faith. I mean, we like to call ourselves a Christian nation often. Christian values are cited all the time. And fundamental to Christianity is care of creation. Mm-hmm. So if you care about the planet, and it's the only one we have, then it seems like it would behoove us to do something to address and at least turn the clock back on all the damage we have caused. In fact, I like to tell people that Pope Francis has heard about what we're doing here in Hawaii, and he's going to come out with an encyclical any day now on climate change. And as a Catholic, I'm waiting eagerly for that.
All right, Dawn. I tell you, though, I mean, I want to ask our panel here, really, the idea about, like, turning the clock back. Chris Lee, I mean, it's some from some of the people we talk to, they say you're not going to turn it back, but you're going to mitigate what happens from this point forward. And you need to understand that suddenly there's not going to be something that happens, divestment or otherwise, that's magically going to make all better. And we're going to have life the way it used to be.
No, I think you're absolutely right. This is something that's coming. Climate change is coming regardless. We're going to have to deal with that. We're going to have to pay to adapt to that, to preserve our way of life here in Hawaii. But the important thing to note is that if we start talking about divestment today as one of the tools to change the conversation, it could take a couple years off of the impact we're having. And those couple years down the road, a couple decades from now, could mean billions of dollars of difference in the investment we'll have to make in infrastructure and the money we'll have to put in to try and keep our society going in the face of some of these big impacts. So it's a question of timing and what we can do to advance the conversation faster than it would otherwise go. And this is one of those tools.
All right. You're just listening to Representative Chris Lee. Going now to another caller, Jim, calling us from Nu'uanu. And if you want to be next, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Jim Scalgi. I retired from the UH College of Education last May. So, of course, my wife and I are, you know, kind of looking at our income now that it's changed and want to be able to live out this life with some dignity here. But the thing about divestment, that's sort of a negative way of looking at it. I mean, the real issue is, what do we want the university to invest in? And at least within our family, years ago, we talked to financial advisors about green portfolios for our stocks. You know, this isn't new. And over the years, my sense has been that we've made about as good a return on our investment in the green stocks as had we invested in fossil fuels.
So your point, well, like Sarah's, is that it can be done, but it starts with the will to do it. As you look at the whole situation with UH, I know you're saying that this is somewhat of a semantic issue of saying divestment versus let's invest in something better.
Yeah.
But some of the folks around this table are also saying, well, this has to be a movement to shake everybody up and to let those powers be know that that's not acceptable. Joe, yeah. Joe talk to you about that.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
He raises a very good point. I mean, it's kind of a two-pronged message. It's a message to say, yes, let's divest. That's a message to the fossil fuel industry that, you know, hey, we want you to, you know, very quickly to sort of basically enlarge the scope of energy commitments that you're making. At the same time, we want folks that are divesting to reinvest in, you know, obviously more, ethical and even moral kinds of aligned funds and so on. It's an important point that was raised by Oxford University. They have a stranded asset program, and they talked about the direct and indirect impact of divestment. The direct impact is minimal because that is, you know, we're not going to cut into the, you know, the billions, perhaps trillions of dollars of profit that these companies make. But the indirect impact is powerful. Based on their analysis of prior divestment campaigns like South Africa and tobacco, they point to the power of stigmatization that, you know, through divestment, you know, the South African apartheid was stigmatized and tobacco industry was stigmatized. And then very rapidly, money starts flowing away from those kinds of funds. And so, in other words, it's more psychological than it is financial. Once we've stigmatized the fossil fuel industry as they stand now, as their business plan exists now, unless they step up and unless they really expand their commitment to alternative energy, then they deserve that kind of stigmatization. So it's that stigmatization process that makes things move very quickly. And that's what we're expecting will happen in a relatively short time span as a result of efforts like this.
Mm-hmm. Joe Mobley, obviously you are a professor at UH. We introduced you that way. You just heard to someone who is a retired professor,
right,
who is a little bit farther down the pike with some of the investments and has been doing this for a while. Do you know of any others who have been doing this, or are sort of, you know, quiet enclaves where people have been talking and actually investing in you know, green-based investments and portfolios quietly? Because it seems like, you know, that's been going on now for a while and percolating through. As he said, it's nothing new.
Right.
But to do it as a movement seems to be where it's galvanized the attention of both students, faculty, and concerned other people.
No, he makes a very good point. It's been something that individuals have done. I know individuals who have. But I think when 350.org came out and really kind of elevated divestment as a major mechanism of you know, change in the whole the fossil fuel industry situation, then it just really gathered momentum. And it's really just been in the last, you know, 5 years or maybe a little more that you know, whole municipalities, like we were saying, are talking about divestment. So larger and larger, you know, blocks of or institutions are looking at this. But it's been around forever. You're absolutely right. But the fact that you know, it's now something that more and more people are looking at, we're going to see its effect build and build in just a few years, I think.
Because it's more of a conversation that we are having in the mainstream.
It's a mass scale, exactly.
All right, we're going to take a few more callers. If you want to join the conversation, call us sooner rather than later, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're going now to John calling from Honolulu. Aloha, John. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you for taking my call. My question is how much divestment might cost? What I'm looking at is when equities are sold, someone gets a commission to sell them. When other equities are purchased, someone gets a commission to buy them. Depending on how long the university has held their energy equities, stocks, whatever they may be, there could be a considerable capital gains tax to pay. And I wonder if anyone in looking at divestment has considered how much the UH might lose financially, at least in the short run, if they make this move. And I'll listen off air. Thank you.
Thanks very much, John. All part of what happens when you sell stock. Somebody's going to make a commission if you're going to go and do something else. His whole point is, how are you going to control those costs and fees?
That's a very good point. That's exactly what the task group, as we call ourselves, is looking at right now. I should acknowledge that the task group contains five regents on it, as well as two vice presidents from UH. So it's this wonderful collaborative effort looking at this. But that point was raised. I mean, in order to maintain the scholarships from this small fund of $66 million, we can't eat into those earnings at all. And if we change the management fee, right now, you know, the company that oversees the management, UBS, charged relatively little because it's just these are you know, externally traded funds that are already packaged and don't require much management. But if we increase the level of management required even a little bit, it'll cut into that $1 million. So he raises a very good point. The solace that we have is that we know others have done it and have done it successfully. So we have to look at those models, you know, how to best answer the question, how to do it with you know, without eroding those earnings, you know, minimally, if hopefully not at all.
Go
ahead, Chris Lee.
I do think there's a couple things to note as well in the longer time scale, because this is not something I think that everybody's going to be doing overnight. You have continual buying and trading over time in any successful portfolio, depending on what's happening in the market. And I think if you lay out a timeline, and some other states have done this, and it's what we're looking at for our state bill of many, many years from now till 2020 or 2025, so that you really minimize any sort of cost that might arise from having to buy and sell. And so you do it in the normal course through attrition. The other thing I'd note, too, is as we get further and further along into the 21st century, there is so much emphasis now on developing new types of alternative technology, because the price of oil, as we know, is so volatile and can go through the roof. It's now cost effective for a lot of these other companies to come out of the woodwork. And already you're seeing through their proliferation studies showing, I think from at least four organizations, analyzing the performance of a variety of these funds and these new portfolios with green companies, both with and without fossil fuels, looking at identical portfolios with the exception of the fossil fuel component based on historical records, showing that you have comparable or even superior performance from these new portfolios. So there's actually potentially money to be made the further into the future we go. Mm-hmm.
So who did these studies?
So we have, maybe Joe can better talk with this. There's four organizations, One in particular, I believe, is coming up. Hold on a second. Let me check my notes here.
But and as you do that, I mean, I think the question in a lot of people's minds are these studies in any way tied to the green companies or those who invest in green portfolios?
Oh, yeah. So great question. So, I mean, clearly
how
you don't want to.
How independent are they?
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think looking, for example, at the historical record and being able to analyze a set of existing funds with existing data whose background we know and compare that against existing funds and existing data from, for example, fossil fuel companies and literally investing in both and comparing those numbers based on a historical record that's already occurred, you can see where you can be better and where you might not. And I think that's the kind of track record that shows that there's potential here if you invest correctly.
Well, if you can get us some of those studies, we will upload those and people can take a look at them themselves. Doray.
I just wanted to add that the one of the studies that was done internationally was a UN meta study on 30 institutions, and it showed that 90% of those who divested from fossil fuels had either a positive, either a neutral or a positive return. And so it shows that the risk is really not as intense as people perceive it to be. If 90% in the past institutions who have divested are seeing either a neutral or positive return.
And these are only institutions that are educational institutions or just
20 of them were academic, so 20 out of the 30.
And which site, what study are you citing?
It's a UN, and it was a UNEP. I don't remember exactly what that stands for, but it was a subset of the UN.
All right, we're going to go to a few more callers while we still have some time to at least talk about this tonight. 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. DeWolf calling us from Honolulu. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. This is a comment. It's going to take this a little bit in another direction, I'm afraid, because the U.S. divest its oil stocks. Someone else is going to buy them. The change in addressing the climate change on the planet is going to cost money. That's called carbon credit. And I think you've heard that in a very short time, about 1% of the world is going to have half the world's wealth. If they don't pony up, no one else is going to. And so we've got to get these enormous amount of disparity in wealth to do the job or to take the lead in this job before we can talk about somebody else that has really not really any meaningful impact to do something. And so
all
that's
right.
My concern.
All right, thanks. That's a good question, DeWolf. Let me just put that to the panel. His concern is that you're playing with the big fish, and if you've got some of the small fish who are saying, we're going to divest or we're going to switch what we're going to do and how we're doing, we're not going to go in your pond, that they're not going to care, that they just have too much to be bothered or to care, and that it's really not going to make an impact. Now, history in certain ways might say that would be wrong in some cases, but how confident are you that that might be the case this time around?
Well, that was certainly the case, you know, going back to with South Africa. I mean, the divestment movement, just like it is now, started off small. But then, F.W. de Klerk, the last president of the apartheid regime in South Africa, was quoted as saying, when the divestment movement began, I knew that apartheid had to end. And then, you know, many credit the decision by California to divest from South Africa funds from its retirement system, just as, you know, Chris Lee's bill is proposing. They credit that as being the critical step that signaled the end of our apartheid. So it starts off small, but it builds. And then in our case, you know, ERS, the Employee Retirement System, we're talking about $40 billion. So that's a clear signal. And sure, I mean, other people may pick it up. But, you know, when that institution is making that statement and divesting from, you know, all fossil fuel related stocks on that level of magnitude, that is a pretty powerful signal.
And you're talking about that institution, perhaps in conjunction with the others that have done it and a growing movement. You're really saying as this thing begins to gain speed and a lot more participation, that that's going to be what makes the dent and makes the point.
Right.
But that you have to start somewhere.
Let me chime in on that, too, because I think divestment is one piece of the puzzle. It's not. It's one tool of many. And I think it's these tools working in conjunction that changes the shape of policy and direction of everything that's going on in our economy. And so I think once you have a critical mass and you have momentum with Hawaii or other states and municipalities divesting, what's going to happen is you'll have education, number one, of the general public, but you'll have political action as well. And that's something that's been proven in any number of instances and different issues, that you'll have response from the government, and it's those policies at the end of the day that can really have an impact on what's going to happen with carbon credits and taxes and filtering out greenhouse gases and things like that. That is really the end goal.
All right, we'll take one more caller. Going now to Michael, calling us from Kona. Aloha, Michael. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you for having me. I'm a investment advisor with Natural Investments, and we're a socially responsible and sustainable investment firm. And I really wanted to address the notion of fiduciary responsibility. Sometimes when trustees or folks are looking at the purpose of the assets, they tend to look backwards and say, well, if we were to remove these types of investments from our portfolio, we'd be breaching fiduciary responsibility. And I just really think that's an obsolete way of looking at what fiduciary responsibility means, because these will be stranded assets. We can't burn this carbon. And so there's a real financial risk of burning that carbon. So because investing is about looking into the future for long-term growth, this is essentially a dying industry. So it really doesn't seem very prudent to consider continuing to invest in fossil fuels purely on financial terms. We're not even talking about the moral or ethical issue.
All right, Michael, that was a very good point. I was wondering if we were going to get somebody to call in from your industry to be able to make points like that. Thanks very much. Good to have you call. We're coming to the end of the hour. Went by quickly, as it always does. And obviously, you are at the beginning of your journey with this, Joe Mobley, and you too with Doration. These things that you're going to be finding out over the next little while, you've got roughly 3 months to be able to make recommendations. Your bottom line with this is that even if it doesn't happen this year, you're not going to give up.
No, I mean, I am committed to this. I've been a resident of Hawaii for about 36 years, and you know, the work that I do, I see the most beautiful coastlines in the world, and in the past, you know, 30 years of flying around the Hawaiian Islands, I've seen it change, and I cannot, in good conscience, just let it keep going. I have to do something. So I'm committed. You know, I've committed my life now.
As long as it takes.
As long as it takes.
And Dore, you got about 20 seconds.
This is a place where people fall in love with nature, and I think we all have a responsibility to take care of that place.
Chris Lee?
Whether or not it's an environmental or climate change issue, we have a fiduciary responsibility to spend taxpayer dollars wisely, and that means not investing them in something that's going to indirectly raise costs for taxpayers down the road.
I think you said something to the order of the other day that every dollar spent on addressing the damage caused by climate change is a dollar not spent at UH.
That's right. That's right.
So, and that which goes back to what Michael called about, Michael from Kona, saying, hey, this is really a financial issue. This is not just a moral or ethical one. Thanks to all of you who called in tonight. Thanks to Representative Chris Lee, Professor Joe Mobley, and to Do-Re Shin. Thank you for being here with us. We'll have another run at this as we move through session and into the year. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I'll see you tomorrow morning on The Conversation. Meanwhile, have yourselves a good evening. Aloha.